Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Isle of Wight show with me, Joe Redston. Today, I'm talking to local businessman Ron Bowler. Ron runs the Juicin' Stores across the island, and he talks to us about what it means to run a successful business here on the island. And he also talks about how much they do for the local community. The biggest part of that would be Walk the Wight. If you don't already know this, Ron was actually the founder, effectively, of Walk the Wight. He was there organising the very first one, and he's still there almost 30 years later. So he talks to us about how it's grown from the handful of people who did that very first walk to the multiple thousands that do it every year these days. So here is Ron Bowler. Welcome back, everybody. I'm here with Ron Bowler, who is the very important person at Juicin's here on the Isle of Wight. And I've known Ron for about 15 years or so now. And I thought he'd be a very interesting guy to come and speak to. And hopefully you guys will feel the same way. So to begin with, thank you very much for agreeing to speak to me today, Ron. Appreciate that. And as ever, could you begin with your origin story? How did you end up on the Isle of Wight, please?
Well, I was born and bred here, actually. Apparently, I'm not a Corkhead because I'm only a second generation Islander, although my sons are officially Corkheads, which doesn't go down that well in modern age. So my father effectively was a boat builder working in Cowes. Worked most of his life in Lallows, the yacht builders. Effectively, I suppose, I came about as part of one of his holidays. His uncle worked at a large house as a chauffeur up in Nottinghamshire, where he met my mother many years ago, who was the middle daughter of the butler and housemaid who also worked at the same house. And obviously she moved to the island on marriage in 1950, and I came along in 1954. So I'm born and bred on the Isle of Wight.
Excellent. And have you spent any significant time away from the island?
No, not really. I started life as a commercial apprentice at J. Samuel White's, the engineering old shipyard down in Cowes. And I was offered, they became Elliott Turbo Machinery, owned by the big American corporation, and I was offered a position in Basingstoke, of all places, which nothing against people from Basingstoke, but it didn't enthrall me. And so luckily enough, the same day as the redundancies were announced, or the package, H.W. Morey's, as was, advertised for a general office manager. So I thought, oh, that looks interesting. And enough said, but I obviously got the job.
And when was that?
That was in August 1981.
Right, okay.
So I've been on this site, or within this site and Sandown branches and other branches on the island ever since.
That's quite unusual now, isn't it, for someone to be with the same company for that length of time?
It is, although obviously on the island you are somewhat more restricted. I've never had the best paid job in the world, but I've always had a job which I found that sort of stretched me. I found interesting, rewarding, and to be fair, met lots of lovely people. And I think that's part of it. Yes, I could have buried myself away in an office because I started in the world of accountancy and ended up in sales and sales management, which I've much preferred because I've considered myself, although whilst I was younger, I was very sort of shy, being an only child, I suppose, but I'm very much sort of a team player. And very much like the communication you get with people, and particularly, obviously, the building trade, you get all sorts, and generally very, very nice people.
So being involved, you know, with sort of construction and Morey's and Juicin' as now is on the island for that length of time, what are some of the changes that you've seen over that time?
The main change is most definitely health and safety. Within the workplace and on building sites, come to that. If I go back when I first started in the industry in 1981, there is lots of, we shall say, tomfoolery in the yard, and perhaps people riding on forklift trucks where they shouldn't, or climbing up racking where they shouldn't, and all sorts of things. And it was very much the same on building sites. I mean, once upon a time, you know, you saw scaffolding being erected, which, okay, and people just sort of wandering around on scaffold without a care in the world, with no handrails, no this, no that, and only back to the building that sat next door to us now. I can remember being built, which was a steel frame building, and the team that put it up, the guy was walking along as though he was a circus act. No safety rails, no nothing. I mean, you wouldn't get away with that now. And I remember the same guy actually doing the roof when I was the branch manager at Sandown. That's not long after our Jewson's acquisition, and they re-roofed the Sandown business because it leaked quite badly. And whilst he was up on the roof, a gentleman from the HSE turned up and said contractor didn't have a hard hat on. So the HSE guy shouts up to the said contractor, asking him to put a hard hat on. And so he shouted down, "Well, I've got some seagulls up here, but what they're dropping on me is quite soft." I mean, without doubt, health and safety, yes. And obviously back in the days when I started, I suppose, Maury's as effectively a timber merchant for the island didn't have a great deal of competition. I came into this position when the Sydenham's business arrived on the island, and since then we got Travis Perkins. But to be fair, competition doesn't hurt anybody, so that's changed as well for our business. But
And then, because you're obviously, you're very active with a lot of other things as well. So is there anything you've observed, kind of not just in your industry, but on the island, sort of business-wise, more generally, big sort of sea changes over that time?
I think, if you go way back, I mean, when I started work, I mean, you had the British Hovercraft Corporation, and I think it was Decca Radar, probably, where BAE Systems is today. And I think that the employers were a lot larger. I mean, when Elliott Turbo Machinery took over J. Samuel White's, we had approximately 1,200 people working in the site alongside the floating bridge. There isn't employers like that anymore. Lots of smaller employers, very obviously, working out of small units on distro estates, and very clever people running electronic organisations and all sorts. But the big employers of the manual labour types have definitely disappeared from the scene. But that's not just on the island, that's probably everywhere, to be fair. So going back, like I say, early days of the floating bridge, and when I first married, although I sort of brought up in Northwood, I first got married and lived in East Cowes, and the floating bridge was absolutely packed first thing in the morning, last thing at night. When it's running now, I wouldn't say it is packed at all. No.
I mean, I hesitate to say this. I don't want to, you know, kind of rub it in, but I believe that you're not a million miles away from retirement now. Is that true?
Well, being born in 54, next year is my 65th. And obviously, retirement law has changed somewhat. And I've always set my stall out to retire at 65. I've known a lot of people who's sort of, you know, not done very well health-wise. So I thought, no, I'm going to get to 65 years old. I'm not going to be the richest pensioner on the branch, in the parish, so to speak. But I'll be a happy pensioner, and I will be busy. I've always given 110%, and I am going to, through my sort of workings already with the hospice, I should call it Mountbatten now, I suppose. I've always sort of been involved in charity functions and fundraising, so I am going to do some volunteer fundraising for Mountbatten. I'm also on the local Rotary Club, Vector Sunrise, and I'm going to take more of a leading role there, because as a full-time employee, I can't do a great deal with them. Although tonight, as you can see from my office, the office is full of balloons and all sorts of things, ready to go into Newport Carnival tonight. So, So, yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed life, and effectively, I suppose, and again, Walk the White has been great for me because, yes, I mean, my father died there after we started Walk the White, raising funds for what is now Mountbatten, or the hospice as it was. But a lot of colleagues have also passed away there, and I think we've all been touched, and you know, I think it's important. Because one of the things about the hospice, and I think there's some people out there to this day that don't really understand, yes, it's got 16 beds, and it's got a cafe, and it's got lots of other facilities. But it also cares for lots and lots of people in the community who have got life-ending problems, from motor neurone through to cancers. So Mountbatten was as a sort of a a gift, I suppose, to the Isle of Wight, because we're very, very lucky. There's not many like them in the whole of the UK. So I just decided, like I say, for 28 years now, we've been raising funds for the hospice with Walk the Wight. So I thought, well, I'll just carry on. But now I'm going to be on their side rather than on the Jewson side.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, your association with Walk the White will be the main way that they know you. So where did that start?
It started, I think it was 1990. I mean, you often wish you wrote these things down, don't you? But we know. We had a guy that worked in the yard called Bill Bradley, fantastic guy, yard supervisor at the time, who sadly, after retirement, died within 2 years in the hospice of cancer. And a good friend of his, and also an employee, Frank Stevens, who's Frank's still around. And I was the admin manager at the time, and Frank and Bill used to have like walking sessions on Sunday afternoons, just, you know, for something to do and bring a few team members into it. And then one weekend in May, they decided it wouldn't be a good idea to walk from Bembridge to Allen Bay. And they asked me as admin manager, could I sort of support this in my car and just bring along some drinks and chocolate bars and whatever else, Kendall mint cake, I seem to recall, for the team. And all, we weren't even raising money. It was just a team bonding type of thing. Anyway, so that worked. And, you know, I think there's about 33, 34 walkers.
So even on the first one, you've got, it's not just two or three people then?
No. There was a few employees. I think about half were employees from memory and friends and family. And then within the next 12 months, one of our manager's wives died in the hospice. And at the time also, the Isle of Wight was raising money for the MRI scanner. So we thought, oh, well, we'd do the same thing again, but raise some money. So we raised some money for the hospice, and we raised some money for the MRI scanner. Again, from memory, I think we had about 140 walkers doing exactly the same route. And then we thought, oh, this is good, and we'd go again. and that spiraled. I mean, the MRI scanner, we only did that 1 year because that became available to the island very quickly. But we decided that we'd kick on and stay with the hospice. And for the first, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 years, I suppose, we got the numbers up to about 600 walkers. And it was always known as Maury's Walk the White. Fantastic. It worked, and we were raising money. And I remember 1 year we raised sufficient funds for like a little a small van type affair where you could put a wheelchair in the back, which we all felt very, very proud of the fact that we raised sufficient funds for the hospice to buy a new vehicle. And then Isle of Wight Radio and County Press, virtually, I think they got involved more or less in the same year. And then it spiraled. And it soon became evident that the days of us weeks and weeks before the event going round to the wholesalers and begging loaves of bread and stacks of butter and cheese and anything else to make sandwiches of was now beyond our control. It was growing so rapidly. So we had to involve other businesses and other support mechanisms. So, but yeah, but the Jewson business, I mean, when Jewson's acquired Maury's in 1991, 1997, sorry. Memory's going, you see, I'm getting old. They stuck by us. I mean, I honestly thought that being a national business, they might say, oh, well, we don't need, you know. But they were, yeah, they were all over it. I mean, I was gobsmacked. Until this day, they always want a report and pictures. And then, again, it got reported in the National Juicers magazine again this year. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, no.
I mean, but the numbers have really grown from those sort of 30-odd people first one. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, give us a rough idea of how much it's grown. What sort of numbers, you know, people and then fundraising?
Within the main walk itself, which is obviously you can do it in three bits, I suppose. You can walk all the way, which is virtually, as most people would know, the length of the marathon course. I think it's just over 26 miles to go from Bembridge to Allen Bay, with the halfway point, or the halfway checkpoint would be the back of Carisbrook Castle. So obviously you can walk the first half, second half, or the full walk. Again, I suppose about 12 years ago, we introduced the flat walk. It might not have been as long ago as that. We had lots of comments from people. They'd like to walk, but they had dodgy knees, or they had youngsters and they needed to push a wheelchair or a push chair or whatever. So we started the flat walk, which was from Sandown into Newport, following the cycle track. Again, that's very popular and that's grown immensely. And then I think it was 10 years ago, somebody within our group decided that we'd have the schools walk the white. Primary schools particularly, the kids are encouraged to, prior to the walk from home to school and back and log how many miles it is. And on the morning of the walk the white, they go from the final checkpoint, or the second to last checkpoint, I suppose I should say, from Freshwater up over Afton Down and drop into the Needles. So, yeah, I mean, and we have definite proof there that youngsters who started doing it 10 years ago are now walking the full walk. So breeding walkers for the future.
Oh, well, that's got to be a good thing.
But in numbers wise, I suppose we've saturated at about 8,500-9,000 people.
Which is, I mean, that's an enormous number of people.
Technically, I'm told, and it's in, that it is the largest sponsored walk in the whole of Europe.
I can believe that. And so, what sort of fundraising figures does it throw out now?
We're still waiting on this year's figure to come in, but it's fast approaching £5 million in total since day one. Obviously, the last few years has been the greater lump of that. But it's certainly well in excess of 4.5 now and moving quite quickly towards 5. So, yeah, it's a big pat on the back for all the island. It's mainly Ireland. I mean, you get people come. I mean, I know people from the continent. There's a couple that stay with friends, and they come from Holland every year. And they come to walk the white.
But it is, I think, the bulk of it is Islanders.
Oh, very much so. It's very much Islanders. I mean, we try to establish different ways. I mean, like fancy dress. And we encourage dogs as well. You know, if a dog gets registered now, they get a bandana. And and there is vets en route to treat dogs, which might not be so good. So yeah, it is it's a good family day.
It's an amazing thing, and it's a big part of, you know, the sort of, you know, it's embedded in the culture of the island now, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it started before the Isle of Wight Walking Festival, and the Isle of Wight Walking Festival anchored itself around the Walk the White, which is quite interesting because obviously the Isle of Wight Walking Festival has now got to be very big. So I suppose we could say we started something for the holiday industry, shall we say.
I think you could definitely yeah, say that, yeah. Ron. So that's, as I say, that's the big thing. But, you know, I know through personal experience from myself, you guys, you know, supported us in the early days of the beach soccer.
Yep.
But you do an awful lot of other things for groups on the island as well.
We do. I mean, I suppose in one sense, I mean, lots of people within our community don't have a lot of money. There's lots of charities out there. And hardly a week goes by when I don't have an email or a letter from somebody asking for help. And I always like to think, and I'm very charitable, I suppose, as an individual, but I like to think if we can do a little on the way just to help people along. I mean, going back when we first met and beat soccer, I mean, at the time I was involved in football per se by a Cowes Sports Football Club. And I could see beat soccer going big time. And to be fair, it's doing okay. It's, you know, it's getting established. It's probably not gone as far as I perhaps thought it could do. And I just thought it's leveraging something for the Isle of Wight. I mean, it's even like now with this, I'm rather Rotary Club, running this fun day at the county showground on the 12th of August. And we're looking at sort of establishing a soapbox derby. Okay, on day one, it's going to be very low key and just running across the grass on the fields. But if you're familiar with the Red Bull soapbox derbies from the States, then perhaps the Isle of Wight should now start having a soapbox derby. Gets a big following over there. So it's another thing. I feel I'm charitable, but I'm an islander at heart, and whatever we can do to better our own sort of mix, whether it's sort of the local charity shop that wants 20 litres of paint to make it look better, or whether it's throwing money at the Isle of Wight Day or doing whatever, then we should do. We should be proud of what we've got.
Hmm. Yeah, I'd go along with that as well. This might be a tricky question. I don't want to call out favourites and things now. But obviously, the success of Walk the Wight is something that you and the other people involved with it, you know, are all justifiably proud of. Anything else in there that sort of over the years that the things that you've contributed to help to? Anything else particularly sort of stick in your mind as something, you know, that really memorable?
Really memorable. Lots of small things. I wouldn't say there's anything that stands out. I mean, we've helped several garden schemes, housing association type projects over the years. Again, just trying to put something back. Helped recently in small ways, helped lots of schools or parent teachers associations who come to us to, you know, we don't normally turn many people away. I suppose now I'm going to open the world up and everybody's going to come our way. But no, to be fair, I just think, you know, we're a business. We've got 5 branches across the Isle of Wight. We employ 85 people. If we can be out there and helping the local community, and then I think we're going to do our bit, and we can walk away and at night and say, yeah, we've done our bit.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Yeah. So it's very obvious. I knew this about you anyway, but even just from what we've been chatting about in the last 20 minutes, it's pretty obvious that money is, you know, not top of your list of priorities.
No.
Where do you think that comes from?
Good question. Where's it come from? I don't know. I feel that my priority is to have be passionate and be supportive, I think. I've got a good circle of friends away from the business, and I try not to mix social and business, to be fair. I've got a good friendship base within the business, if you understand that. And I know people, if I end up shouting, they know I'm serious. I'm driving the business, and obviously we have budgets, so obviously I've got to make money for the business. And in my own world, yes, I need money. But would I say no? I mean, no, I, money's not the be-all and end-all. I mean, my lifestyle, I'm comfortable. I'm happy that I can help people. And I think if I can bring people some little bit of satisfaction, or that's not quite the right word, is it? Something a little bit that they might not have had, a bit of friendship along the way, then that's fine. I get more pleasure out of that than money.
Hmm. Okay. And do you think, can you trace that back? You know, was there perhaps an early experience where someone did something for you that made an impression, or is this something that your parents instilled in you maybe?
I think, if I think back, blimey, I'm going back a long way now, aren't I? I mean, we never had a lot of money. I mean, I was the only child. My father was a boat builder and it was never a very highly paid job. So we never had a lot. We had to do everything for ourselves. And I think from that generation, my parents, although quite young, and they were employed during the war. And I think that generation didn't have a lot. I suppose it started with me probably when I was in the Scouts in Northwood, to be fair. Early to mid 60s. I mean, the scouting organization was good. You get good camaraderie, good teamship, but also we used to on Christmas morning go from Cowes to the almshouses in Cowes. You remember the old trek carts of the old we used to pull a trek cart from Norfolk to Cowes almshouses with logs in, and it was only something. But the people were always very grateful. Whether it started then or not, I don't really know. I just felt that if I help people along the way, they get a thank you, you get a smile, and that's the way it is. I was quite comfortable with that, and I didn't look for anything other than a thank you. I mean, I suppose one of the things in life, I don't suffer easily, and it's different to that. It is customer service. I like to think that our business, and we get surveyed quite a lot by our sort of bosses up in Coventry, is to them the good customer service. And I'm proud to say that the juice and business on the Isle of Wight always come up in the top few branches every year. And that's an irritation of mine, and I think it doesn't take anything for anybody to look up if they're busy and say, we'll be with you in a minute, etc., etc. And whether that's part of the same as being charitable, it's just the expectation, I think, you get. And I'm not asking, and people can smile. If you're working in a job at the end of the day and you can smile, then smile. And just say thank you or do whatever you've got to do. Because at the end of the day, you know, makes everything much better. So, yeah, is that the same? I don't know. I think it's all linked, but, yeah, that's customer service is one of my passions, and I think that and the sort of the charity side of me sort of probably links across somewhere.
Yeah, it's very much...
Probably need a psychologist to find it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it's very much, it's a focus on other people, I guess, right?
It is a focus on other people, yeah. I think if you're there to do a job, at the end of the day, if you can't be courteous and polite, then please don't do the job. I mean, it's just as simple as that, and yeah.
Sounds very simple when you put it like that.
Perhaps.
excellent. So what about kind of outside of work? You've mentioned sort of rotaries and things like that. Are we allowed to delve a little bit into what Rom might get up to when he's got a bit of free time?
When Ron's got a bit of free time, Ron's going to have some gold nugget time for myself and my wife. When I retire, well, I'm retiring at the end of March next year, right. So I shall be 65 in a few days. In actual fact, I was told last weekend I actually retire on Brexit Day. I thought it was the 31st of March, but apparently now I'm finishing on Brexit Day, which is the 29th because it's a Friday. So, so it's a day I shall always remember. Obviously, but no. I mean, I'm going to work. I'm not going to work. I'm going to be a volunteer fundraiser with the Mountbatten team, And I'm actually going to have a very nice holiday, which is already booked. I'm for virtually 3 weeks. I'm going to Canada, the Rockies, and the Rocky Mountaineer, and all that entails.
Very
nice. When I say money's not important, it is when it comes to that, because it's not cheap. But I mean, I've been married 40 years in September this year, and with retiring, it's just pushing the two together and having sort of some me time or us time before I embark on driving up to Holbury Lane. Goodness, how many days a week they want me, but we hope that I won't get they've already said I'm in, so I'm down to be the president of Vector Sunrise Rotary Club 2020-2021, so I shall need some training prior to that, because I've only scratched the surface of Rotary, really. And I've also been seconded. I live at Northwood, and most people would know Northwood, and there's a WI hall there. Well, the ladies that run the WI are now getting on in years. And somehow I volunteered at a local barbecue, and I am now on the committee for the Northwood Village Hall. between that I do have a grandchild on the way, which is the first one as well. So between all that, I'm going to be pretty busy. I'm still going to be giving 110% to everything I do.
it certainly sounds like it.
Yeah.
Is there anything in amongst all of that stuff? It doesn't really sound like you've got time for very much else. But is there anything, you know, have you got plans to add anything new to that? Any kind of new skills you want to learn or any of that sort of thing?
I've never been very practical. It's quite funny that. But I do think that I should take up some form of... We've been surrounded by wood since 1981. Perhaps I should take up some sort of woodworking. When I went through school, I was totally typical lad, I suppose. Can do better was the report. But never very practical. But when I did my CSE, as it was in those days, woodwork, I got pretty good grade for it. And whether it was because of my father was a boat builder and all the rest of it. And one of the funny things I thought was two things. Do I go and sort of learn a bit more about woodwork, although I've been surrounded by it for 30-odd years, and actually make things? And the other thing I got quite interested in is there's a guy out at Newtown that does wood turning and makes bowls and things. And I thought, wow, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
It's not going to be, some people have suggested golf, and it's not going to be golf. I'm sorry to all anybody golfers that picks this up, but it's not going to be golf. I helped run Cow Sports Football Club for a good number of years. Whether I get back into helping local sports and football again, the door's not closed, but we'll see. But I do, it sounds funny, doesn't it? I've been surrounded by timber. I was thinking only this to myself the other day. Since 1981, and obviously been associated with it because my father's built, wooden boats. He hated GRP with a vengeance. You might find me making stools and chairs and something somewhere.
we'll see you.
Perhaps I'll join men in sheds.
I'm sure they would welcome you with open arms.
Yeah.
So we've talked quite a lot, and I think a lot of your philosophy around business has already come across in some of the things that we've spoken about here. What kind of advice would you pass on? And then secondly, is there something that irritates you? Is there sort of some bad advice that you hear or something that you see, you know, done time and again, and you think, crazy?
You've got to treat everybody's different. There's no one person I've come across which is exactly the same as another person. They don't exist. Everybody is different. You've got to work people to their strengths. And You can't change individuals. You can help coach, and you can help, you know, whichever way you want to do it. I remember when I was back in the days of J. Samuel White's, there was a guy, the cashier's department back in those days, was two people, the cashier and the trainee, which was me. And we had one of those big old-fashioned desks, as you would have done with the old inkwells, with the quill pens, as it would have been. That's not during my time, I think we had a Bic biro between us, but hey. And he looked at me, and he said, and then he had sort of half-rimmed glasses, and he looked at me, and he said, "Nipper," he says, "you want to get on, don't you?" I said, "Yes, Mr. Chiffin, yes, yes, yes." He said, "Don't you ever forget," he said, "as you go up that tree, don't you break them branches off, because when you come down, you might need them." And I think that was one of the best bits of advice I was ever given. And I don't go and make enemies. I do not make enemies, purely and simply, because what's the point? You know, I don't go out there. I have a bit of fun with people, and I might stretch the truth or do what have you, but I don't tell lies, I don't make enemies. And I just think people can then, they know they can trust you. And I think, like I said earlier, if I do end up shouting, they know I'm upset. And I think, you know, I'm quite chilled and laid back, and I suppose I always have been, even when I'm under pressure from above. I'm lucky that, yes, I get panicky, of course you do. I think everybody does if there's pressure applied upon you. But I think the thing is, at the end of the day, is to be truthful and just work with people and work with their strengths. And if you can get a little bit more from their weaknesses, that's fine. It's a team game. I mean, if you're working in effectively our business is, okay, it's trade and it's retail. We're dealing with mainly builders, but the Mr. and Mrs. do come in to see us. I mean, the kitchen department is very successful, and most of that is retail business. And I like to think I've made the team to sort of develop that way, which, you know, they're honest, they're hardworking, and people know that they can get that service, and that's where we are. And you ask about irritations.
Yeah.
And I think, well, I've already touched on it, I suppose, irritations. It's where you go into a business, and they're service-based, but their service is rubbish. And I'm not saying we're perfect, because people could walk in here and find things at fault. Of course they could. But you could if you went to Harrods. So come on, let's be fair. But I go to businesses. I went down the town today. And, you know, and sometimes you meet people who are in the service industry and you think, yep, if they applied for a job, you'd tick the box and they'd come in. And there's other people you'd say, if I ever saw them again, I would steer clear of them. And I think the irritation is bad customer service, because there's no need for it. You know, because at the end of the day, they got to make a living, and the better service they give, the more people are going to come back. So my irritation is definitely poor customer service.
Excellent. Cool. Thanks for all of that, Ron. Really appreciate you sharing your time with us today. Just before we wrap up, one last little question for you. As someone who spent all this time on the Isle of Wight, you may not want to give away your secrets here, but is there something on the Isle of Wight that you wish more people knew about, or something that you wish was better attended, or more people did?
I could say the Rotary Family Fun Day, couldn't I?
You absolutely could.
Yeah. No, more better attended, more people.
Or perhaps something that more people took advantage of.
I think the Isle of Wight is blessed. I mean, in this type of weather, it's trebly blessed. It's got some wonderful views, some wonderful footpaths, some wonderful... I just think sometimes we take a lot for granted that, you know, you could drive, quarter of an hour at the most, and you get to a lovely beach somewhere. And I think there's a lot of people have these sort of, whether they feel trapped by the island because we're on an island and they got to catch a ferry, that is what it is. you know, and I think the Isle of Wight is a wonderful place. It's a great place to bring up kids. Hopefully it's going to be a great place in retirement. I'm thankful that I live here. The only bugbear of mine is that when you're on the mainland, you always drive to the ferry and you look at your clock and you're driving faster and faster as the departure time gets closer.
Yeah, I think we've all done that. Excellent stuff. Okay, that's great. We'll wrap things up there. I really appreciate your time today. And yeah, thanks again. Really
okay, thank you.
So there we go. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Really appreciate that. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, do please leave us a review or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. And the best thing that you could do would be to tell someone else about us. Share this on social media or with one of your friends or something. That would make a massive difference to it. Really appreciate it. Thanks again for listening. And we look forward to catching up with you again sometime soon. Cheers. Hey everybody, I'm working on a new podcast project at the moment. This one is about people who have faced and overcome problems. If you know someone, maybe they have recovered from a serious accident or illness, perhaps they beat an addiction of some description, or maybe their life just hit a bit of a rough patch and they found a way to get through it. Whatever it might be, if you or someone you know would be happy to share the story with me, then I'd really love to hear from you. You can get in touch with me via my website, which is joeredston.com. That's joeredston.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much.